WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today. At least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth.
Very good.
Thank you. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are tuned in to Monday Night Talk right here at 95.9 WATD. My name is Kevin Tachi, and we have a great show lined up for you. We also have a political forum that will be on deck coming up at 7 o'clock. First, a little bit about our guests. We start things off with Hanson Board of Selectmen Chair Ken Mitchell. Ken's been on the program before and talked about the different things that are going on in the community. This evening, he's going to talk a little bit about a forum that is being held at the Whitman Hanson Regional High School in the Performing Arts Center. And the idea is to inform folks about a request to pass a Proposition 2.5 override. Town is having a little bit of an issue financially. The idea is to see if they can raise taxes. Not raise taxes, well, there are going to be certain ramifications for the services that the residents rely on, depend on. Kenny, of course, will talk a little bit about that and give us some insight into some of the folks who are going to be a part of that political discussion or part of that discussion about the override. I believe that there are going to be department heads there and that there will also be a virtual way for you to ask questions. But Kenny is going to give us all those details coming up in just a few moments. Our second guest is Dr. Dean Finelli. Now, he is not a doctor. If anything, he is someone who specializes in patent, regulatory, and transactional law. He's an attorney in Washington, D.C. He's with the office of Cooley LLP. And Dean is one of these guys who actually is an expert on pharmaceutical and chemical-related technologies. It's going to be great to chat with them about two different things. One, seems more and more as the vaccine is being distributed and spread around the country, that in fact that it's being a requirement that you have to have been vaccinated in order to attend school and maybe go to certain events. We'll talk with him about the legality of that. And also get his take on the pause button being pressed on the distribution of the Johnson & Johnson COVID vaccine over blood clot concerns. So we're going to talk with him about that. And as I teased, there is going to be a political forum starting at 7 o'clock. That, of course, being moderated by managing news editor Christine James, also include Charles Matheson. That's coming up, and the candidates will be for the Board of Selectmen in the town of Marshall. So that's all coming up in just a few moments, so stay tuned for all those details that I just shared with you. Right now, no time for us to find out one final time what is happening out on the roadway. We're brought to you by BrennanSmokeShop.com with locations at Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, and Weymouth.
Well, thanks, Kevin. 93 North is heavy from Route 28 down to a rollover in the median after Route 37. Southbound's tough from the Braintree split up past the northbound crash scene. The expressway southbound is slow from the on-ramp from Freeport Street to Neponset Circle, then you're jammed from Furnace Brook to the Split. North Bend is an easy drive from Braintree to Boston. Route 3 South is clear from the expressway to the Sagamore. Then you're slow over the bridge with lane restrictions on either side. And Route 6 West is backed up over 3 miles up to the Sagamore. This report is sponsored by Whole Foods Market. This week at Whole Foods Market, get 20% off sustainable wild-caught previously frozen Chilean sea bass through April 20th, plus an extra 10% off for Prime members while supplies last. Traffic on the 9s every morning. I'm Lisa DiMilo in the WATD Traffic Center.
Hey, it's Jeff from Brennan Smoke Shop. I gotta give credit where credit is due. Al Gamache & Son, Michael Green Painting, and Foley Electric. Without these local contractors, Brennan Smoke Shop would be ugly. Every store we open, these guys get better and better at building them out. Take the new store in Hudson, New Hampshire, for instance. We put the display cases and the huge, absolutely enormous walk-in humidor on the same light switch. Thank you, Foley Electric. Justin Gamache, the and son, put a ramp in for the two-wheel dolly that carries the product from our local wholesaler, William Zoll & Son. Michael Green Painting. Oh my God, dude. They're like thing one, thing two, thing three, thing four, except they put paint on, not take it off. Come see their workmanship at our new store in Hudson, New Hampshire, June 2021. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts and soon New Hampshire. Customers must be 21 years of age or older and proper ID is required.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right, we're back for the first segment of Monday Night Talk. Hey, just a reminder, it is a shortened show this evening as we are going to have the folks who are running for selectmen in Marshfield. They'll be coming up at the top of the hour. But we're doing a little something different. Normally, the first segment of Monday Night Talk, traditionally, I'll say break tradition, is the State House Report. But there is a important community event that is taking place in the town of Hanson. And I thought it was important enough to have this conversation, as I've been in touch with the chairman of the Board of Selectmen. Kenny Mitchell is joining me. Kenny has been on the program previous times and chatted. Ken, welcome back to Monday Night Talk.
Thanks for having me, Kevin.
You got it. I wish we were talking about great things like football and spring and that, you know, we could see the end of COVID in sight. But if anything, something larger looms on the horizon. I know that tomorrow night there is a forum that's being held. This is a community forum. It's going to be held at the Whitman Hanson Regional High School in the Performing Arts Center. It kicks off at 6 p.m. And I believe that the main focus is to talk about the town seeking an override. How did we get here? Is that a good first question to ask you? How did the town get to this point where there's a need for a $1.85 million override?
That's a great question, Kevin. And, you know, it's derived by increased costs. You know, the school is a portion of the override, but it's not just a school. This is a town-wide override. And, you know, the town has increased costs. You know, we have contractual agreements that we have to adhere to, insurance costs, gas, you know, so it's just increased costs is kind of how we got here.
I know that last year you and I had a conversation and I had conversations that there was a potential for an $800,000 deficit that the town was able to collectively close. Here we are back a year later, getting ready on the cusp of town meeting, which is just a few weeks away. How important is it for folks to go up and attend this informational meeting tomorrow night at the high school?
So what we're having is tomorrow night, we're having at 6 p.m., like you said, at the Whitman Hanson School in the auditorium. I wanted to have an informational session where residents could come in and ask questions to mainly our department heads, Kevin, And I wanted residents to be able to ask, you know, how their each department would be affected. You know, so if you're concerned about how long it's going to take an ambulance to get there, you could ask the fire chief, you know, how this possible override, if it doesn't go through, how his department would be affected. So I thought it was really, really important to be able to get the information, you know, out there and allow residents to be able to ask important questions, you know, whether or not they're willing to give up some of the great services that we have in the town of Hanson. So this is a way where residents can either come, ask their questions, or also we're going to have it's override at hanson.gov, I believe is the email address. You can also email questions in ahead of time, and we'll take those questions and we'll ask those questions to the proper professionals there that night. We're also going to have a YouTube, which we'll post this on the Hanson Facebook page. We're also going to have a YouTube live setup where you can go on your PC at home or wherever you are, and you can go on, log in the comment section on there on YouTube and ask questions that you may have. So I think we have all the bases covered, because some people are still not comfortable with, you know, with going out in public. So we want to make sure that, you know, we have the opportunity to be able to allow anybody that has any questions at all, you know, regarding the override.
How important is technology playing a role in this particular meeting? Again, you're talking about this kind of a sub hybrid meeting here, where if folks want to send questions real time as it's happening, and then having folks come to this, how important is technology?
Kevin, I think social media is extremely important. So I've been meeting every Friday with our financial team for the past, we started back in November, but the past 6 weeks. And one of the things our chairman of our finance committee, Kevin Sullivan, and discussing, you know, on how we're going to be able to do the form and all the information we're going to put out. Kevin had said to me in one of the meetings, you know, Kenny, we really need to use social media and use the internet so we can get that information out. And, you know, I'm a little electronically challenged. I don't have Facebook, but I can tell you that I believe Kevin was right. You know, so the Hanson Finance Committee has been putting things out on Twitter, informational stuff on Twitter, putting informational stuff out on their Facebook page. So I think social media in 2021 is playing a huge role in the information, being able to allow us to be able to get the information out to residents.
Has the town ascertained the amount of loss if in fact the override doesn't pass? We know the first hurdle is for folks to pass the override question at town meeting, and then there'll be a subsequent vote after, unless things have changed. I believe that's the first start. And so getting out early and often, but what does the town stand to lose? What do departments stand to lose if in fact folks do not approve this override?
So first of all, the process is town meeting. We'll go to town meeting on Monday, May 3rd. We'll vote the override. There's an article question on there whether or not residents want the override. If it passes at town meeting, it'll then go to the May 15th election. That's from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Hanson Middle School. So what the town would lose if the override is not successful, first of all, the override is $1.85 million, Kevin. And, you know, we've got cuts pretty much townwide. Okay, for example, Parks and Fields, we're cutting $5,000. But unfortunately, $5,000, it's going to take a lot of $5,000 to get us to the 1.8. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, the only way to make up that large number, that large deficit, is employees, you know, unfortunately. So we're looking at, if the override doesn't go through, approximately 6 police officers, 4 firemen. There'll be a couple positions cut at town hall. The highway department would lose 1 to 2 people. And, you know, our highway department is already a employee down. You know, our highway department is very small. I believe we have a total of 5, maybe 6 guys, you know. So this is really, really, it's going to affect people's livelihoods, you know. So we just want to make sure that we get the word out and just make sure that everybody understands what they're voting on or voting for on May 15th.
And again, if you're just tuning in, we are speaking with Ken Mitchell. He is the chairman of the Hanson Board of Selectmen. And we're talking about a special meeting that's being held at the Whitman-Hanson Regional High School, 6 p.m. tomorrow night in the Performing Arts Arts Center. And this is to talk to not only to the Board of Selectmen, but there are going to be folks from each department in town discuss, you know, how badly, you know, discuss what could possibly happen if, in fact, this override does not pass. The, you know, Kenny was just talking about seeing a cut when it comes to police and fire. And those are essential services that everybody really gets upset about, saying, oh, my God, you can't cut that. But, you know, you have to make cuts somewhere. And I know that over the past few years, the town has always tried to keep a level funded budget and made cuts where there was hardly any places to cut. And it's got to that point where now you're going to have to make even deeper cuts, which means it's going to spell positions that you may not be able to have back for a few years if in fact, it doesn't pass. Is that right?
Right. Yes, absolutely. And, you know, you brought up the override last year. There was an override that failed of $800,000. So fortunately, we were able to make up that deficit through, you know, a few different sources. But, you know, unfortunately, what we did was we borrowed against our 401k to pay the mortgage. So, you know, we obviously can't continue to do that, and we couldn't do that. We don't have that much money anyways. But it's, you know, one of the things is Hanson is all, I've been here all my life. Hanson is an extremely affordable town. It always has been. I'll just give you a quick example, Kevin. Our tax rate in the town of Hanson is $15.25 per 1,000. Surrounding towns, Halifax, right next to us, $17.44 per 1,000. East Bridgewater, $17.56 per 1,000. West Bridgewater, $17.81 per 1,000. You know, so considering the great services that we have, you know, Hanson's a great, you know, bedroom community. You know, it's been extremely affordable. And, you know, just like you at home, you get increased costs with certain things. And, you know, so that's where we are. But, you know, these are real numbers. If this doesn't go through, there is no way that the town can make up the shortfall of $1.85 million. It's real numbers, you know? So we're hoping we can educate people, enough residents, where they can see, you know, that they don't want to lose the good services that we have currently now in Hanson.
And is there a real possibility that you'd have to maybe cut hours at essential places like the library? Maybe you don't have overnights at the police station. Maybe you close down the fire station overnight. I mean, are these some of the things that you're toying with?
Yes, absolutely. That's already the library. You must be reading my notes, Kevin, because there is positions, part-time positions over there that are going to be cut. When you talk about the police station, right now, currently, if you needed to, you know, if you had a serious event, you needed to go to the police station. Right now, you can go to the police station at any time during the day, 24/7, and there's a police officer at the desk. Unfortunately, if we have to lay off 6 police officers, the police station will go dark. There'll be nobody at the police station at the desk if this doesn't go through, you know. So again, these are part of the great services that we offer that I don't want to lose. And I'm just hoping that, you know, enough residents are able to see that and support this override.
Is this fiscal crunch also affecting education in town? Is this having an effect where you have to have a conversation with the school district and say, listen, we're struggling here. What can you do to, you know, whatever the annual assessment is that you're going to put upon us and our neighboring community, Whitman, you know, is this going to affect them as well?
Yes, yes. So we've already, you know, as far as the schools, they did help us out a little bit. They went back and voted on Wednesday night. So what the school did was the school reduced their budget by $775,000 by using ESSER funds. It's called ESSER 3 funds. And that's basically going to give the town of Hanson about a $305,000 reduction, okay? But unfortunately, those ESSER 3 funds that the school committee was kindly enough to vote to reduce the budget, it's a one-time thing. So, you know, they'll be, they won't have that money to be able to reduce it next year. But I think after this is over, you're right. You know, we need to do a better job communicating with the schools so we can have a better idea when we're working on fiscal 2023, where we are, what the increases are. So those conversations absolutely have to be made. But, you know, the school is done, you know, the best that they can. You know, there's a few people that think differently, but I refuse to sacrifice public safety and education at all costs, if possible.
You know, the one thing I have to ask you personally, and I think a lot of times when I've covered so many of these requests to the community to be able to help a municipality, is a lot of times when the ask is being put out by elected officials or someone who's a governing board, a lot of times people don't realize that you, the person who's asking, are also going to be taking money out of your pocket. Do you think people, that's lost on people, that just because you're asking, that like somehow you're circumventing the system?
Yes. No, you're 100%. Or maybe they're possibly thinking that because I'm a selectman, my taxes don't go up, you know? Right. So, no, I would be willing to write my check today and drop it off at town hall because, again, I'm not willing to lose the great services that we currently have, you know? And this is just level funded, Kevin. So this is not any increases. We've got departments that are shorthanded and not 100% staffed even before this. So this is just level funded. This is just to maintain and sustain, you know, the town of Hanson. This isn't, you know, any types of increases anywhere.
Again, we're speaking with Ken Mitchell. He is the chairman of the Hanson Board of Selectmen. And again, reemphasizing that we're talking about the forum that's being held at the Whitman Hanson Regional High School tomorrow night at 6 p.m. in the Performing Arts Center. Kenny, we just got a minute or two left. Anything that you want to leave on the folks who are, you know, anything that you want to share that maybe we haven't talked about, or just reemphasize with my audience who may live in Hanson or who might want to attend this meeting tomorrow night?
You know, the only thing that I would say, Kevin, is, you know, for our residents that are on a fixed income, we know, you know, we get it. We understand, you know, we've had, you know, talks about it. The one thing that you have to understand, if your taxes, for example, are $5,000 a year, if this doesn't go through next year, you're still going to pay $5,000 a year. But unfortunately, you possibly could have half the services that you currently have now, you know, so we are aware of that, but we really, really think it's important. You know, it's a business. You have to. Six police officers, for example, is almost $300,000 to, you know, to train, to get them all the proper training they need. We've invested that money, you know. So if we lay those six police officers off, it's like throwing that money away. You know, if you had a financial advisor call you and say, hey, Kevin, you just lost $300,000, you would fire him, you know? So I just, that's kind of where we need people to kind of look at this thing. And, you know, the town of Hanson's been fiscally sound. It's been run. We have a great accountant. I've been here 7 years, you know, and there's no waste. We're not, you know, throwing money away. But I urge the residents, you know, if they can get out there on Tuesday, get the information and support the override, you know, if they can, on May 15th at the ballot.
And just one last thing, and just a reminder, folks who may not be able to attend in person, or again, we are still in the middle of a pandemic. If there's a chance that if folks want to, instead of attending in person, give them the information in regards to being able to virtually share questions with the folks who are attending tomorrow night.
Yes, so it's going to be Hanson Override at Hanson/.gov. But on our Facebook page, we'll have the link for you to be able to click on there, and you can join live and ask questions through the comment section. Town Hall will send out on Monday. If you're signed up with the email blast with the town, like they tell you when taxes are due and different things throughout the town, you'll get an email just reminding you. But we'll have the information on our website, and also we'll do that email blast. And one more quick thing. Per 100,000 assessment, the increase in taxes would be $125, Kevin. So everyone's assessment's different, so you'd have to look up your tax bill. Every 100,000 that your home is assessed, it's $125 per 100,000. I don't want to get that wrong.
No, don't get that wrong. But again, I'm sure it's going to be clarified tomorrow night. Kenny, we're out of time, but I want to thank you so much for joining me and sharing this information. And hopefully you have a tremendous turnout. You're able to inform the folks so they're better informed come May 3rd when it comes time to attend town meeting. And then if it's successful during town meeting, again, on to May 15th, which is when the annual town election is. But the ballot, there'll be a question on there if, in fact, it passes town meeting.
Right. Yes. Excellent. Absolutely.
Kenny, thank you so much for your time. And we're going to step aside here. And when we come back, I promise you, more Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.
At South Shore Bank, helping you reach your financial goals is the priority. But helping you strengthen your community is our passion. Service is a commitment, but support is a calling. Success is the name of the game, but sharing success is the only way we win. As a mutual bank, we make sure that what's good for you serves the greater good. Because here, profits are reinvested in our communities. Success, the feeling's mutual. Visit us today at southshorebank.com. Member FDIC, member DIF, equal housing lender.
Are you worried about your drinking?
Or is someone else worried about your drinking?
Alcoholics Anonymous has a solution.
There is no shame in living with a disease called alcoholism.
Regardless of your age, employment, or any other circumstances in your life, you deserve help from other individuals who understand what you are going through.
Alcoholics Anonymous has a solution.
Call 617-426-9444 or find online meetings at aaboston.org.
Buying, selling, or trading in a car? Learn from the experts how to make the process work for you. Tune into the Boss Auto Show every Saturday after the news at noon on 95.9 WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Thank you for joining us here on Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. It seems as though for the past year and a half almost, maybe a little less than that, COVID has been a regular conversation on this radio station and on this program. Joining us to talk a little bit about vaccine requirements. This is something that is spreading. It's kind of a way of life, not only here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, but across the country. Talk a little bit about that. And whether or not that should you be made to get the vaccine? Is this overreaching on the part of our elected officials? We'll also talk a little bit about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and how that has been hit on that because of issues. Joining us to talk about this is Dr. Dean Finelli. He is not a medical doctor, but he is more in the area of patent regulatory and transactional as an attorney in Washington, D.C., with the office of Cooley LLP. Dr. Finelli, thank you very much for joining us, sir.
My pleasure. Good to join you.
So I guess the first thing, how often are you, how does COVID change, how has it changed your life as an attorney and your office?
Well, certainly, you know, the life science industry, that's the dominant issue. There are so many companies that have pivoted. We're seeing new technologies developed. I mean, one of the really fascinating things, I think, that has come out of this is we're seeing mRNA technologies, which are used in the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, validated. And at least in my opinion, I think that's the future of medicine. A lot of additional technologies, cancer vaccines, as well as therapeutics that are going to come out of that. It's kind of interesting to see that happen in real time, the validation of a new technology.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because I believe there was a news report today that, in fact, in some of the research that was being done in regards to finding a vaccine for COVID, that, in fact, that maybe they might be able to find something to help in the area of AIDS. And we know that that's been, you know, something that we've been dealing with here for the past 25, 30 years, hoping for a cure, some way to vaccinate someone from AIDS. And there has been a medical breakthrough in that area. So it's I'm glad that you mentioned that.
Yeah, it really is incredible. You know, this technology is not new technology, although these are newly approved or authorized, in this case, technologies. They've been studied for decades. The mRNA research was developed out of University of Pennsylvania by Katie Carrico and Drew Weissman. Katie Carrico is with BioNTech now, the BioNTech Pfizer vaccine. So this is back in the 80s. So this is technology that's been studied for years. So it's really interesting to see it now validated. And as you mentioned, it really opens the doors to potentially using this technology for a lot of different viruses as well as other areas.
You know, one of the topics that I'm looking to kind of get your insight on is the vaccine, the requirements. And it's something that we're seeing here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, where you're being told that in order to be able to do certain things, you're going to need to prove that, in fact, you did receive, whether it was the Johnson & Johnson when you were able to get that, or the Moderna, the Pfizer shots. Give me your thoughts in regards to this being something we're being told we need to do. Is this the way of life, or do we have the government more or less telling us what to do?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. You know, certainly from the legal aspect of that, the government does have the authority to mandate vaccines and require its citizens to get the vaccine. So the government has said it's not going to mandate that. But as you mentioned, we are seeing employers and businesses and certainly universities start to talk about the requirement for vaccines. And I think this is more of a temporary thing. You know, we're still in that period of time where the majority of the country is in the phase of getting vaccinated. You know, it looks like adults will hit herd immunity sometime over the summer. And we are seeing universities start to say, okay, if you want to come back to the university next fall, you will have to be vaccinated. So I think it's a situation where we're going to see this in the short term while we're still getting a handle on this. And I think in certain instances, it's the right thing to do. Certainly, you know, parents want to understand that their children are safe at universities. But again, I think we have to keep it in perspective that it's very unlikely to have any serious symptoms for college-age students. This is really a virus that affects older people. But again, you know, there are variants out there, and certainly a situation could arise where, and we are seeing as college students start to get out there and younger people start to get out there, the level of the virus infecting younger people is certainly increasing. So I think this is an area where we'll see this in the short term. You know, certainly, you know, we've heard about what's going on in New York with this Excelsior pass. I mean, I think that's a little bit over the top, you know, to say you need vaccines for ordinary everyday things, I think, and requirements and passes and verification, that's probably a little bit over the top. And that's why I think people are starting to say this is government overreach. But certainly, you know, we can imagine for air travel and for universities and certain situations where there's crowds, you know, I could see at least in the short term where this is reasonable to ask people to do this while we're getting our hands wrapped around containing the pandemic in the U.S.
And again, if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Dean Finelli. He's an expert when it comes to pharmaceutical or chemical-related technologies. Talk a little bit about the vaccine. Interesting enough that it was just announced that there's a bit of a pause going on regarding Johnson & Johnson. where there have been instances in six women who actually had clotting. I know there was also an issue in regards to production, and it might have been some contamination. Give me your thoughts on what you've heard in regards to this story and the setback. Do you call it a setback, or just is this just a bump in the road?
Yeah, I don't necessarily think it's a setback. I think this would reassure Americans that the FDA is taking this seriously. Any type of serious adverse effects, the FDA and CDC will look at. You know, and also I do think that a lot of this has to do with the fact that blood clots were reported in Europe as it relates to the AstraZeneca vaccine.
Yep.
You know, having it reported here with regard to J&J, I think the FDA just wanted to get ahead of that. So to reassure people, you know, this is a very rare event. And just to advise and look at this and to be able to advise people, you know, when they, granted, it's an extremely small number of people that have had these blood vessels, or excuse me, blood clots. It could be the type of thing where they can identify something that's in common, where they could warn if it's, you know, limited to women, or generally warn people. All right, if you have this, similar to what we saw earlier, that people were that had previous allergic reactions to vaccines, you know, they're now monitoring for 30 minutes. So I think this is more of a bump in the road than a serious setback. You know, when you think of six cases and over 7 million doses, extremely rare. And I don't suspect that, you know, the J&J pause will last that long unless, you know, there's something that they quickly identify. But again, extremely rare. And I think people that have already gotten the J&J vaccine, they shouldn't be worried. You know, this is, it's very safe and it is very effective. But nonetheless, it's something the FDA wants to reassure Americans that they're looking at.
Doctor, if you could give us the pros and the cons of this particular situation, though, knowing that, you know, people, there were some people who were still on the fence whether or not to get this. I know that there, you know, there are people who are anti-vaxxers who will not get the vaccine and don't want their children to get the vaccine. How does this hurt the current cause for herd immunity? And what are the pros as to this action being taken for safety?
Yeah, I think the pros of this are, as I mentioned, the FDA looking at this, the CDC looking at this, and reassuring Americans that, you know, we're taking safety very seriously. I think it should be pointed out that this is limited to the J&J vaccine. The Pfizer and Moderna are different types of vaccines. They're mRNA vaccines, and they've had no reports of any types of blood clots or serious issues that I'm aware of. So, again, you know, certainly there are people out there that are just not going to take the vaccine. They're anti-vaxxers, as you mentioned. But I think, you know, on the pro side, this should reassure Americans that the FDA is looking at this. You know, given what happened in Europe and the fact that AstraZeneca and J&J use somewhat similar technologies, this adenovirus vector technology to deliver the genetic information to generate this immune response, given what happened in Europe and the reports there, I think this was more of, out of an abundance of caution than I suspect. Had we not heard those reports of blood clots out of Europe, it's probably not likely that there'd be a pause at this point due to the small number of cases.
The thing that I would also ask you, and again, knowing that you're an expert on pharmaceutical and chemical related technologies, have we gotten any updates in regards to the effectiveness of getting the vaccine? Is this something that, like, it's your annual flu shot, or is it a possibility that they're still trying to figure out whether you're going to need a booster shot in 6 months?
That is a possibility. I mean, we're learning about this in real time. Pfizer and Moderna have come out and said that it looks like they've seen about 6 months worth of memory response. Now, that's at least 6 months. They're still studying that. It could be the memory response lasts longer. But you bring up a good point. It could be that, similar to the flu, where we have to have an annual type of booster shot. But the good news here is, you know, when we look at the science that's really coming out on a daily basis, it looks like the not only do these vaccines, including J&J, protect against the symptoms of the virus. It's now being shown that the Pfizer and Moderna are effective in preventing the transmission as well. So a lot of science is still being learned. There's a lot still to be learned. but it's moving in the right direction. And I think, you know, the answer to your question, whether we're going to need an annual booster at this point, we just don't know how long that memory response is going to last, but it could very well be the case. And I'd also add, there's also studies being done to have a combined flu and coronavirus vaccine, should that be the case, so that you don't have to get poked twice.
You know, I'm sure you're tapped into the folks in pharma and biotech. I mean, what are they saying in regards to being able to be ahead of the curve when it comes to the variants that we're dealing with, knowing that we have so many different types of variants that are growing more and more resistant to vaccines?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that's, you know, when we hear these comments that are coming out of CDC, that's the real issue there. You know, certainly when we look at the current vaccines, especially the mRNA vaccines, they look like they're effective against the current variants that we're aware of. But the point of that is, you know, as new variants emerge, there could be a situation where they're not as effective or not effective at all. So that's why I think when we hear the CDC and FDA say, you know, keep your mask on, keep social distancing, it's more a public health issue for the country as a whole, because we don't want to be in a situation where as this more people are becoming infected, that new variants are emerging and the vaccines aren't effective. So we're in a very strong position when it comes to where we are. We're administering over 3 million doses a day. Almost 200 million Americans have received at least one shot of the vaccine. So we're moving in the right direction to hit herd immunity in adults sometime over the summer. But again, you know, the variants is kind of that X factor out there, and that reason why we have to still be cautious and still be safe until we have this under control, even globally for that matter. But, you know, for the most part, until we have this under control in the U.S., you're probably going to continue to hear those messages about keep your mask on, social distance, et cetera.
We just got a couple of moments left in our conversation, Dr. Finelli. And we have been speaking to Dr. Dean Finelli, expert on pharmaceutical and chemical-related technologies. Anything we haven't touched upon or anything I haven't asked you, but you want to make sure you share with my audience?
I think it's important to note that even though we're hearing a lot about J&J and this pause, you know, people should understand that as a whole and at large, the vaccines, all of the vaccines, J&J, Pfizer, Moderna, the authorized vaccines in the U.S. are very safe. They are very effective. It's shown that they are effective against variants, and it's looking like they're also effective against the transmission. So we're in a very strong position. We're moving in the right direction. We could see that light at the end of the tunnel. You know, and I think people just need to kind of bear with it a little more, possibly till sometime this summer, continuing with that kind of social distancing and doing what the CDC and FDA recommend, because as you mentioned, variants are out there, they are occurring, and that's kind of the issue that could really make this go sideways for us.
What's the one thing that you're looking forward to getting back to doing that was part of the normal way of life for yourself, doctor?
Well, I'll tell you, I saw the Texas Rangers had a full stadium. I was a little surprised to see that, but I'm looking forward to going back to a baseball game and just sitting there and, you know, watching baseball in a crowded stadium. But, you know, I don't think we're there yet. I was a little surprised, like I said, to see it in Texas. But, you know, we're almost there, and I could see it happening sometime, you know, over this summer.
No, wait a minute. Now, I'm going to ask you a personal question. Are you an O's guy or are you a Nats guy?
You know, that's I'm neither. I'm in the Washington area, so that's a touchy subject. I'm from Philadelphia, so I'm a Phillies guy.
Okay, that's fair enough. I mean, I've been to both parks, love both parks, and I can't wait myself to get out to a ballpark and enjoy the atmosphere.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, we all want to get back to normal. We're all getting this virus fatigue, and you know, but we're almost there.
Dean Finelli has been our guest on this segment of Monday Night Talk. Dean, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
We will say goodbye for this evening, or at least this part of the Monday Night Talk radio program, which will be back next week at 6:15 p.m. But stay tuned. Upcoming is a political forum featuring the candidates for Marshfield Board of Selectmen. Of course, Christine James will be your moderator. That's just coming up in just a few moments here on 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.